Like, I don't want you to assume anything about me based on how I sound. Accents should be normalized, non-standard accents. I don't think we hear those enough. This is why, like, we need more voices that are different than the standard, because people don't hear it enough. That needs to be normalized. We need to see more of that.
Welcome to the Podcaster's Guide to a Visible Voice. Reveal and define your voice to speak your truth through the power of podcasting. And I'm your host, Mary Chan. So let's go. Hey, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining me today. This is episode number 22 with special guest, Hadar Shamesh. I first heard of Hadar going down the rabbit hole of looking for new podcasts to listen to. We've all been there, right? You go from one podcast to another podcast, or you hear a recommendation and you plug it in, and then you see the, oh, what you also might be interested in. Hey, that works. That's how you can start getting some organic reach for new listeners. And so that's how I sort of ran into the Influency podcast from Hadar. It caught my eye, or in this case, my ears, and her passion to have her listeners own their voice was so much aligned with my own, and I kept hearing myself say yes, yes, agreeing with her content and how her words were very similar to my own passion and values of empowering women's voices and creating a diverse voice in the podcasting space. So I had to reach out, and I'm so glad that she decided to come on the show. Hadar is an Israeli entrepreneur who helps non-native speakers of English find clarity and freedom in English. She is committed to dismantling the notion that English belongs to native speakers with a standard accent, and shares her work on her YouTube channel, Accents Way English with Hadar, and her podcast, which I mentioned earlier, the Influency Podcast. Today, we chat about owning your voice with a non-standard accent, imposter syndrome, because sometimes you think, oh, that accent that I've got, oh, people aren't going to understand me. Not true. Listen up for that. Showing up publicly, whether on a podcast or on video, when English is not your first language, breaking through to find that confidence, and the lack of diverse voices and the impact that has on how we perceive our own voices. Hadar is so inspiring, and I know you are going to find a lot of great insight from listening to this episode. So, let's get started. I have a lot of conversations with podcasters, and some are uncomfortable with their voice because they have an accent or they speak, you know, quote unquote, differently than everyone else. So they don't want to start their podcast, or they don't want to be a guest and share their expertise, or even like they're hiding behind their voice when they're on social media doing their lives or whatnot. So my point of view, though, is that accents are a positive thing. It shows diversity, and that I don't want you to get rid of your accent because it shouldn't stop you from sharing your passion. And we all have an accent, depending on where you live.
Absolutely.
I remember going to New Zealand and they were all like, oh, I love your accent. I'm like, no, you're the ones with the accent. So can you explain native English, what that really means, and maybe some of the myths around that?
Yes. Okay, so that's a great question. And I definitely see that a lot in my work. There is this assumption that native English is like one way of using the language. It's usually associated with standard English. Let's say if it's American English, then it's standard American, British English, received pronunciation, standard Australian. That is the ideal of the language, right? Like how the language is used. Now, to be honest, most speakers don't have a standard accent. It's something that is usually acquired because everyone has an accent. You know, whether it's an accent or a dialect of English or whether it's a foreign accent, everyone has an accent. And that idea of I'm ashamed of my accent is like I'm ashamed of who I am, or it's like being ashamed of how you look, you know, your external features, where you're from. The thing is that people associate non-standard as inferior. And that is the main problem, because being a native speaker of English is basically being born into the language. So you grew up hearing your parents speak English, but in so many countries that are that are not the US or Canada or Australia, for example, Nigeria or in India, people are born into English, yet they don't have the standard English and they're not considered to be native speakers. So being a native or speak like a native, or that whole jargon of, you know, how to use the language properly and how to sound good.
Yeah, proper, exactly.
Right. What's proper English anyway? That doesn't make any sense. And standard is something that someone, once upon a time, the standard accent someone created. Like, we need to ask questions around who is that person anyway that decided that that's standard English. And that's the people who were in power. And usually, you know, the dominant culture has created a certain standard accent, and that's not aligned with how people actually use English. So let's first understand that there is no such thing as native English or standard English, because there is this variety in the language. I think that understanding that creates a little more freedom and permission to sound different than what you think should be. But I also think that there is a lot of criticism around people with accents. With foreign accents, people get comments, people hear other people commenting on other people's accents. So they develop the sense as if they cannot be perceived as the authority while having a non-native accent or non-standard accent. And that implies on a person's intelligence or fluency, which is not true, yeah. Right? Like, it's not, it doesn't correlate with fluency. It doesn't correlate with confidence, like the way you pronounce sounds. It's more technical.
Yeah, I get that too, because I was born in Vancouver, but my parents immigrated from Hong Kong and China. But because I was born in a community of English speakers, I don't have a Chinese accent. I mean, I can put one on and mimic my parents, but I don't. And so, you know, even when I was in radio, I got my first radio gig. I would be on the radio and speak, and then I would be out on location meeting the community, and they're like, "Oh, you are Mary?" Because they see my face. And they're like, "But you don't have an accent." Mm-hmm. You know? And I'm like, "What? Does that mean I'm less than you? Like, why did you say that? And what is that connection there?"
Right. And why are you assuming that I should sound a certain way because I look a certain way? Like, that assumption, like, people want to put labels and stereotype people and put them in groups. You are different than me. Then I need to see, you need to sound different too. There was a really great research that I read about in the book, How We Speak.
Oh, yes. Catherine Kinsler?
Yes, exactly. Kinsler.
I interviewed her in the last episode.
I love that book.
Yes.
And she said that people were listening to two groups of people, people who looked, you know, with the same accent from the same place, exactly what you're describing. One group had Caucasian features, so they looked like white Americans, they were Americans, and the others were of Korean descent. The listeners, even though they had the same accent, said that they had a harder time hearing or understanding the people that didn't look like a typical white American, right? So because they looked different, then they had a harder time understanding them, even though they sounded the same, which just shows that there's all this filtering that goes on in our brain and all these ideas about how we need to sound and how people need to sound based on how they look, where they're from, their names.
Yes.
So I think that this is definitely something that we need to check in with ourselves. If we do that towards other people, and if that happens, if we feel judgmental towards other people, or we do hold some unconscious bias or biases, then I think that can definitely reflect back to us. And then we can feel self-conscious about how we sound because there is that like inner criticism going on.
Mm-hmm. This sounds a lot like I've heard the phrase accent bias.
Mm-hmm.
Can you paint a picture for me about what accent bias is, what it sounds like, or what it looks like?
I see that it relates to race and it relates to where you're from. So there is like this accent hierarchy where certain accents are perceived to be more exotic or sophisticated versus some accents that if people hear those accents, they automatically assume things about you. Or I can tell you a story that I have students from the US, they've been living in the US for years. they have an accent. They have a foreign accent, Spanish accent in the case of this particular woman. And she works at a call center. Her English is super fluent. She's very smart. And every time she answers the phone and people hear her accent, they're like, can I speak to someone who speaks English? Or can I speak, right? Like, or they speak to her like she is not that intelligent. Like they speak slowly, they get angry. So just simply by hearing an accent, they already assign certain characteristics around who this person is. And so I think that people stereotype other people according to how they sound. So, because as we talked about before, like people like to group people or label people. And I think how we sound definitely plays into that.
Also that we're human and that's how people figure out the world is to put people into these categories
right.
and judge them. And then how do we get around that? I know this is maybe just a rhetorical question.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big question. Like, how do we fix accent bias?
So I think it goes both ways. First of all, like we have to talk about the people who are the listeners, right? Like we have to develop awareness. I think accents should be normalized, non-standard accents. I don't think we hear those enough. This is why like we need more voices that are different than the standard because people don't hear it enough in the media and in Hollywood. Then they already have opinions about the people hearing those accents. And I think that that needs to be normalized, right? We need to see more of that. And I think that we constantly have to have that conversation around if I have that a lot with my students that people comment on their accent or on their English, or you sound a lot better than I thought, or you sound really, you know, good for a non-native speaker, for a person who has been living in the US for 20 years, right? So
yes.
I think that it needs to be acknowledged. So our job is to always, you know, say, yeah, you know, thank you. I grew up here, or I've been learning English for 20 years. And to not just take that role of, oh, okay, thank you, or not to say anything. But I think we need to speak back. And when we get negative feedback and negative comments, I think that it's important to speak out and to call people out when they are, it's like, it's still politically correct to talk about people's accents. And I think that's wrong. Like, I think that we need to start setting some boundaries around how much you can talk about my accent or how I sound or my English, because it's my own personal journey. And if I want to share that with you, I will. But I don't want you to assume anything about me based on how I sound.
Yeah. So, okay. So for an example, I was in a women's networking group and there was a guest that showed up who had a name I couldn't pronounce. Most of us in the room couldn't pronounce. And she had an accent. And then the conversation skewed to different accents. And I felt so uncomfortable. And I felt uncomfortable for her too. Mm-hmm. So what could I do to speak up? What should I say to make it aware to the group, you know, in the future, whenever this happens again, because I'm sure it will, what should I say?
That's a good question. Like, I think that in this case in particular, I would ask, is she interested in discussing her accent and where she's from? Because some people don't mind, right? Like, some people are happy that this is a topic for a conversation. But I can tell you that in my experience, when I moved to the U.S., and I had a very distinct Israeli accent. Every time someone would ask me about my accent, I would want to leave the conversation. I wouldn't want to talk about my accent or my name or where I'm from.
How to pronounce it properly.
And how to pronounce like it, yeah. Right. Like, and I actually changed my name. I changed my name to Julia so I wouldn't have to go into that conversation. Yeah. Like right now, I would never do it again. But that was me when wanting to immerse right in a culture.
Yes.
And I didn't want to constantly be reminded that I'm different.
I kind of did the same where my parents knew that they didn't want to give me a quote unquote, you know, anglicized Chinese name. So they went with Mary. It was as generic as they could find. But then when I went on the radio, I asked my boss, could I just call myself Mary? I don't want to use my last name. And it was kind of the same reasons too, where I was like, I didn't want to be heard as the token Chinese girl on the radio. And so I didn't use my last name at all for many years.
And I think that like we need to own our voices. And I think we need to celebrate the fact that we are different, because I think this is a real power in us, because when we feel like we are not enough because of our name, or like when we feel like we need to hide something, then our voice, right, our accent, by sounding like a native, then we'll never feel 100% authentic. We'll constantly have that voice or that inner critic listening and reflecting back and judging, which will never give us that ultimate fluency or freedom that we want to have when speaking. This is really the thing that we need to work on, like owning our identity and owning our voice, however we sound, and understanding that we have room and we belong no matter how, no matter that we don't sound standard, no matter how people might judge us or question our authority.
Yes, that's a big one. Mm-hmm. I find too, you were talking about the inner critic earlier, that maybe, you know, in the podcasting space, and I heard it a lot in radio, where I would be producing the commercials and I would get more feedback and criticism about a woman's voice versus a man's voice. And I would have to redo all my work because they're like, I want a man's voice instead. And this, she doesn't sound authoritative enough, or, you know, whatever it is.
Right.
So in your work, how are women judged differently for their voice?
When it comes to talking about accents or English, I don't necessarily see that women get more negative feedback, but I see that women have internalized that feedback or that negative or that judgment that women usually get, and the need to prove themselves and the need to work harder to succeed, especially in the workplace, where I absolutely see how women speak less. They're more of a perfectionist, right? Like they're afraid to speak before they have it all figured out. And they're a lot more concerned about how they sound rather than their message or how they communicate. Whereas with men, and again, like I've worked with hundreds and thousands of people, like in person and online, and I don't think that men don't experience that. They do fear, you know, getting stuck or, you know, not sounding intelligent. But at the same time, they speak more than women, who will stay quiet or not show up, or not, if they are entrepreneurs, they won't publish videos or they won't create a podcast because they're afraid of what people are going to think about them. So there is a lot more sense of, if it's not perfect or if it's not right, I might as well not do it at all.
Right. Yeah. I'm not going to even try. Why bother?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's not going to work. And of course, the fear of, you know, getting that negative feedback, which, between us, who cares what people think, right?
Yes. I mean, I was listening to your Influency podcast, episode 100, and it was describing native speakerism, which I love because I didn't go to academic school, university. I went to radio school. So having to talk to you now and putting words to what I'm feeling and thinking is great. So, you know, in it, you were talking about how to respond to criticism. And that ties into what we're just talking about here. And usually I'm either too shocked to say anything. I'm just like, huh? Mm-hmm. That happened? Or I just ignore it because it doesn't deserve my time. I don't have any mental energy for this. So I'm just going to leave you alone.
Which is very smart, by the way. Like, we definitely don't want it to get in our way.
But then how do I also, I want to respond to it too sometimes because it's the after the fact, you know, it's 20 minutes later and you're like, oh, I could have said this. Oh, I could have said that would have been awesome. That would have been a great comeback. So how do you respond to criticism?
So I think first of all is to understand that it's meaningless. I think it's hard to respond to criticism if there is like that voice in you that says maybe it's true. So understanding wholeheartedly that this is BS, right? Like it means nothing and that person knows nothing about me. So like that deep conviction is a must to be able to respond quickly and powerfully. Also, it's important to have that deep understanding that when we put other people's opinions before self-expression, then that means that, you know, their opinions matter more than us, right? Because if we decide not to speak, or if we decide not to respond, or if we participate in, oh, they're saying something nasty and I feel ashamed, then we're participating in that. We're collaborating. We're acknowledging that they're right in a way, right, in this weird, twisted way, because we like to torture ourselves sometimes with all those negative voices, right? So it's important to remember that their opinions are not more important than our self-expression and our need to communicate and what we want in our lives. But also, especially when it comes to native speakerism, that when people use language to have power over us, then we need to draw the line. So when we get that criticism about how we sound, about our accent or about our fluency, or maybe we use the wrong word, even if it was on a podcast or even if it was public, we still, first of all, communicate in second language, which is incredible. And not a lot of people are able to do that. And we need to draw the line where people think or make us feel like they are better than us because we are not at that level. Native speakerism in general is this assumption. Well, it started from like the ELT industry, where like in English language teaching, where native speaking teachers are considered more superior and better than non-native speaking teachers because the language is intuitive and culturally and pedagogically, like they are better than non-native speaking teachers, even though research shows that that's actually the opposite, because non-native speaking teachers can explain things in a way that for native speakers, like that's just intuitive. And for non-native speakers, like we had to learn it ourselves to be able to explain it in a clear way.
I know I used to host international students and they would ask me like about their grammar homework. And I would say, oh yeah, well, the grammar should be this way. And they're like, why? I'm like, I don't know.
Exactly.
That's just the way I've always said it. So I think it has something to do with an adjective or an adverb, but I don't know. That's just the way I say it.
Right. Exactly. It's great, but it doesn't help the student that needs to make sense of things, right?
Yes,
like they need
exactly.
to organize things differently in their brain. That's just how it is. That doesn't help. You know, even when I teach pronunciation, people tell me that like the way I explain it makes sense to them. And the reason why that happens is because I had to learn that myself, right? Like I had to learn what to do with my mouth and what happens, like why I can't do it repeatedly. And that's how I explain it, which just kind of like clicks to them immediately. And yes, and that assumption that a select group of people, because of their linguistic background, and I would put that they're not just all native speakers, but standard speakers, right? Like, because non-standards are sometimes considered to be less intelligent or like depending on the dialect. So, you know, I think that we need to be very cautious of that. And when we recognize that someone uses that, or when you experience that, it's just like with any other type of bias or ism, you know, racism or misogyny or something like that. When you feel like someone is crossing the line because you are different than them and you feel inferior to them, I think that this is where you recognize it's not just about you. It's about something bigger, and to draw the line right there.
So then, okay, when we are going to draw that line and we are going to use our voice, what are your tips to get podcasters to speak more effectively if they have that fear of their accent?
Right. So first of all, to be prolific, just to create a lot, because you just get comfortable doing it. And when you create a lot, you also don't have time to dwell on, oh, that worked well, that hasn't worked well.
So true.
I remember that when I started creating my YouTube channel, I made a lot of mistakes, especially like typos, or, you know, I didn't have a team. I was doing everything on my own. And every time I would post a video, I'd be like, oh my God, I did this and I did that. And I get all critical. And then when I started creating more, I just didn't have time. I had to move on, right? Like I had, you know, one day to think about it, to feel bad. And then, okay, I got to get ready for the next one. So I think committing yourself to creating once a week or twice a week or whenever you do create, or I think that is really, really helpful and you get comfortable with it. I think recording yourself and listening back and then listening without being too critical, but like with this, as if it was your good friend, and you'd be like, okay, but I think that this is what you can do. So because you don't hear yourself in your head the way you actually sound. So it's really important. And a lot of people don't like it. They don't like to hear themselves recorded.
Yeah.
They like the cringe factor. They're like, I can't believe I sound like
that.
That's
how I sound.
Exactly. Yeah. And it makes sense. In your head, like your voice resonates inside your head. When you record yourself, it's different. So I think that practicing getting comfortable with your voice or listening to your voice. So I have this exercise that I give my students of taking the same subject and recording it for 2-3 minutes. And then the next day to listen to it, ideally a video, but audio can be great too. And then to listen to it and give yourself 3 notes, right? Like 3 things that you'd like to improve.
Yes.
And do it again and again. And to do that for an entire week or sometimes 2 weeks, right? How you introduce yourself, how you talk about something that matters. And then by the 7th day, it's certain that it's going to be better than the first day, right? So repetition and constantly listening to yourself and being your own coach in a positive way. So just like a coach is not going to make fun of you, that's the same thing. You need to give yourself recognize what's working well and also give yourself kind of like some points for improvement. And I do love everything around speech exercises. I think that the muscles are a huge part of our speaking. And when we speak a certain language, then the muscles that are required to produce those sounds of our native language, we use them all the time. And then when we speak another language, we don't use those muscles as effectively.
Yes.
So speech training, tongue exercises, tongue twisters, repetitions, I think this is really helpful. It's just like working out. So your voice is your muscle, your voice is your instrument, and you have to understand that this is really like you have to work on your voice and on your muscles to be able to produce the sound that you want and to be confident speaking.
Yeah, I love those points. Then I started thinking about, okay, what about actual pronunciation, like right or wrong pronunciation? I remember there was a time I worked with this voiceover artist at the radio station, and he would always pronounce the word Tuesday with a CH in the front, Tuesday.
Tuesday, yeah.
Tuesday. So, you know, in radio with the broadcast standard accent, I'm like, nope, it's got to be a T sound. So what about that? You're the pronunciation expert. Should podcasters be making sure their pronunciation is correct or a certain way?
So when I teach and when I coach, I like to get my students to follow the 80-20 rule, which is focus on the 20% that will get you 80% of the results. So you can't work on all nuances of speech because it's impossible. And that's very crippling. Like you constantly think about your sounds and not about your message. But if you recognize what are the key sounds that are going to massively improve your pronunciation and how you use your voice in a way that energizes what it is that you're saying, not just the sound standard, but also because when you say ah instead of eh, the voice is more energized and this is like the, and it's clear and the quality is crisp. So if you change that, it can actually change the presence of your voice. So focusing on that rather than the T's, for example, if you have a lot of, and the T's are really important when you're speaking to the mic too. So maybe the T's are part of your 20%, but let's say that people with a few challenges that prevent them from sounding clear. So I only work first on the things that prevent them from sounding clear. Because if you're clear and you're communicating well, you're good. Speak out, focus on your confidence and not so much on the nuances, because the nuances can be very, very inhibiting.
And there could be a whole grocery list of them. So
exactly. So, you know, it's going to end up being you just like dealing with sounds in your head. And we don't want that.
No, exactly. So this has been so great. I do have one last question, though.
Yes.
What would you say to a podcaster who is concerned about their accent and is preventing them from getting behind the mic?
So it all comes down to priorities, because if the fear of being judged is preventing you from pursuing your dreams and delivering your message, changing people's lives, right, with your message.
Yes.
Then maybe your message is not that important eventually, right? Like if you feel, if you're afraid of what potentially what people might say about your accent, then you need to rethink your priorities, because that's what it comes down to. I'm sure that people who want to speak on a podcast, you know, when you compare those two things, that they say, of course I want to speak. Of course I want to change lives. So recognize that if you're afraid and you're not showing up on video or behind the mic, then it's just because that is more important. Like a few Joes that are sitting there and thinking, who does she think she is, right? Like speaking to the mic. So that matters more than all the people that you might change their lives. So I think that focus on what really matters, focus on those that don't care about, you know, the fact that you pronounced a T this way or another way, and they just want to hear what you have to say, because that it is really what matters.
Thank you so much, Hadar. That was amazing. Thank you for sharing your knowledge and expertise and using your voice.
Mary, thank you so much for having me here. It's been a true pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening to The Podcaster's Guide to a Visible Voice. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd love it if you'd share it with a podcasting friend. And to reveal more voicing and podcasting tips, click on over to visiblevoicepodcast.com. Until next time.